Well, we're back today for our second sermon in the series, Thank God It's Monday. This series where we're trying to talk about what it means to join God in our work, to be with God, to deal with this question, how is God at work in our work? Now, last week we started this conversation. So for those of you who were here last week, we talked all about how we can find God in our work. We talked about work. The definition of work we used came from Dorothy Sayers, which says, work is the gracious expression of creative energy in service of others. And then we added on, for the glory of God. Work is the gracious expression of creative energy in service of others for the glory of God. So let me ask you, how'd you do this week? How'd you do this week in making your work a gracious expression of creative energy and service to others for the glory of God? How'd you do? We had kind of a funny moment this week as Monday morning rolled around. My daughter and I got ready and got going to Gildersleeve Middle School, and we were running behind, and we looked at each other as she's hopping out of the car and said, "Hey, thank God it's Monday." Running late, that's real Monday life, folks. That's really the way it works. Work is the gracious expression of creative energy in service of others for the glory of God. Our work is not about whether we're paid or not. Not about whether we work for a company or whether you work for your family. It's not about whether you're a student, an executive, or a welder. Work is the activity you do during the day that is your gracious expression of creative energy and service to others for the glory of God. Now, we learned last week that work is not a punishment. We learned that Genesis 3 actually comes after Genesis 2. And if you don't know what I'm talking about there, you have to go back and you have to watch the video from Facebook Live, or you have to go back and listen. You can go to the website and you can download the sermon from last Sunday and you can catch up on that a little bit. Genesis 3, where we hear about the punishment of toil and drudgery, comes after Genesis 2, where we discover that human beings were created and placed into the Garden of Eden to take care of the garden, to do the work of the garden and live in community with one another and in community with God, and to revel in the joy and celebration of community. Work was a part of our existence. Paradise in the Garden of Eden was not sitting back on a lawn chair with fruit drinks, with a Roomba handling all the vacuuming and somebody else handling all the lawn care. Paradise involves work in a way that gives us fulfillment, gives us purpose, and yet is also a gracious expression of creative energy in service to others. We work not just to make a paycheck, not just to acquire something to do with our time. We work in order to express who God made us to be and to give creative energy on behalf of others. We work so that others are built up, so that God is given glory. So somehow, what we decided last week is we have to reframe our work in terms of God's work. Because you know what we discovered, oddly enough? Most of the time, our work doesn't feel like a gracious expression of creative energy and service of others. After all, have you been in the Navy? Have you been to the shipyard? Have you been to the American high school, middle school? How much gracious expressions are you seeing in the checkout line at Costco? Anyone? There you go. It's loads of fun. Sometimes work just feels like, well, work. How do we learn to see God at work in our work? Because the temptation, friends, the temptation is that we make our work into drudgery and toil. And we begin to believe that work is for no purpose at all other than simply existing and getting through the day. But God offers us a different perspective. A perspective that says He is already at our work site. He is already where we work. He is already there ahead of us. And when we go to work, we are joining Him in what He is doing. and therefore we can have purpose and we can make a contribution that not only builds a company, but a contribution that builds God's kingdom. Is it really possible that we can join God at work in our work and that we can also find fulfillment and satisfaction in doing so? I don't know if you've noticed, but fulfillment and job satisfaction are big deals in our world. We long for those things. There was actually a survey done of men in 2018, and that survey was done to try and figure out what makes men tick. And what they did in this survey, they came to a conclusion after all the survey results were counted and everything was put together. They recognized that the number one factor in happiness for men is job satisfaction. Did you hear that? The number one factor in happiness for men is job satisfaction. Not their marriage, not their family, not their leisure time, not their hobbies, not their motorcycle, not any of those kind of things. The number one factor in whether or not men described their lives as happy was if they were satisfied with their job. Now, you can debate whether that should be or not. It is. And in all fairness, job satisfaction matters a great deal to women as well. Now, thankfully, women are a little bit more well-rounded than us fellas. They have other things that play into that as well, and so do men. But men, in this survey, it was very illuminating how much job satisfaction played into male identity and male sense of purpose. Interestingly enough, this is referenced in the Bible. It's a writer in the Bible who wrote a book that we call Ecclesiastes, a very wise man. And when we see this, when we find him, he's having kind of a hard day. Because he's trying to look for the meaning in life, trying to understand what makes life meaningful. And he comes to the point in Ecclesiastes 2 where he talks about maybe work makes life meaningful. And so we read in Ecclesiastes 2, starting with verse 18, I hated all things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to one who comes after me. Isn't that a real uplifting thought? How many of you have this as your life verse? I hated all things I had toiled for under the sun. Wow. Verse 19 goes on, and who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. Yet he will have control over all the work into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair. Yeah, no kidding. Over all of your toilsome labor under the sun. For a man may do his work with wisdom and knowledge and skill, and then he must leave all he owns to someone who has not worked for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. This guy is really bringing me down, y'all, I have to tell you. What does a man get for all the toil and anxious striving with which he labors under the sun? All his days of his work is pain and grief. Even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is meaningless. Really bad day, folks. The depression is strong in this one. A man can do nothing better than eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the man who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. This wise man has come to realize that work without purpose is pointless. That work for the purpose of acquisition and production does not lead to the life that we are created to have. He is recognizing that if we try and find purpose in simply our toil alone, we are going to end up in the place where we simply say all of this is meaningless. And then he processes for a moment. He says, The only way we find enjoyment, the only way we find purpose and satisfaction in our toil, is if we connect to God and we see God at work in the midst of our toil. God at work in the midst of our work. So you see, friends, this conversation about job satisfaction and job dissatisfaction that is prevalent in our world is an ancient conversation. It's an old one. And it's one where we recognize the wisdom that comes from understanding that if we do not find purpose in our toil from God, we will begin to believe that our toil and our work has no point. So how, friends, how do we join God in our workplace? Because remember, God's already there. We claim as people of God to believe in the omnipresence of God. That means He's everywhere. That means He's everywhere. And we also notice from John 5, we learned this last week, that God is always at work. Because Jesus talks about His Father is always working and that He too is doing the work of God. God is always at work, and God is at work in every workplace you can think of. Even in the ones that are doing things that are not godly, God is at work trying to turn, trying to change, trying to reform, trying to renovate hearts and lives and redeem things that are broken and buried in sin. God is at work. There is no place that is outside of His loving care. So how do we join God in our workplace? Because He's already there. First thing we have to do when we join God with our work is we have to start with us. We start with us. Start with you. What does that mean? How many times have you been in your workplace? And you've heard someone blaming their lack of job satisfaction on other people. Maybe they blame their boss for not paying them enough. Maybe they blame their coworkers for not working hard enough. Maybe they blame the company for its outdated policies. Maybe they blame the boss for not building into them, or they blame the boss for always seeing somebody else that does something good and never noticing what they do that's good. Maybe they're the ones who say, you know, I'm the only one around here that really does all the work. I'm the only one that really carries the load here. All these other folks, I don't know what they're doing. Maybe they blame the company for not hiring enough people, so they're having to carry 4 or 5 jobs. If you look around and listen hard enough at any workplace, it's not hard enough. It's not hard at all to hear blame. Pointing the finger at other people. If we're really honest and we listen to ourselves, we might even hear it coming from our own voice. Friends, as with anything else, it's much easier to point the finger than be the solution. It's much easier to tell everybody what's wrong. It's much easier to blame than it is to be one who fixes. As followers of Jesus, we believe that we are created for work, to graciously express our creative energy in service to others. And we believe that God is at work in our workplace and that He's at work in broken people. And that all people matter to God, including the ones that are frustrating at work. We have a choice, friends. We have a choice. We either spend our emotional, physical, mental energy, spiritual energy at work blaming folks and pointing out everything that's wrong, or we can spend our energy looking at us and seeing what effort and what energy and what encouragement are we bringing to the table. Colossians 3:23, the core verse, the theme verse for this series. It's so important that it's on the screen, but it's also in your bulletin because I want you to take it with you. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord and not for men. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as if you're working for the Lord, not working for men. We either try and spend all of our energy on blaming everybody else for what's not right, or we spend the energy renovating our attitude and our effort Let me tell you a secret. You can't control what anybody else does. You can control what you do. If you want your job to work, if you want to join God in your work at your job, you start with you. Because that's what you can control. The first responsibility you have at your work is always leading yourself. Every single day, giving the very best that you have, because you are not working for your boss. You're not working for your coworkers. You are working for God, who is in your workplace alongside you. Start with you. Second thing we need to do if we're going to join God at work is we need to expect trouble at work. Expect trouble at work. That sounds like the writer of Ecclesiastes, right? That's uplifting. Expect trouble at work. You know, we tend to think that we need to go to find the workplace where everything is perfect. Everything is placid. Everything is ready. Everything goes the way we want it to do. Folks, your workplace is full of people. Last I checked, you're a person. You're not going to have a perfect workplace this side of heaven. Expect trouble at work. John 5, 16 through 17, we alluded to that just a minute ago. Jesus is working on the Sabbath. He heals someone. He's getting persecuted. He says in that text, he says, "My Father is always at work, and even now I'm working with him." Jesus is working, and he's getting persecuted. The Son of God has trouble at work. That means we're going to have trouble at work. John 16, 33. Jesus tells his disciples, as a matter of fact, on the very night they share this meal together, Jesus tells his disciples in John 16, 33, "In this world you will have trouble." Not you may have trouble. Not every third one of you will have trouble. Not, well, if you're good enough and you work hard enough and you do the right things enough, you will escape trouble. In this world, he tells his disciples, you will have trouble. Guess what? You spend most of your time at work, you're going to have trouble at work. Count on it. Prepare for it. Because it's going to happen. We spend too much time trying to pine for the perfect workplace. It's not there. God is at work in your real workplace. And he wants you to join him in your real workplace. In your work, you will face stress, frustration, and you will face the temptation to think that your work is all toil and drudgery without purpose. You will face long hours and limited appreciation. You will face criticism. Joining Jesus in your workplace does not eliminate your trouble. It does, however, redefine how you handle your trouble. In this world, you will have trouble. But take heart, Jesus says. I have overcome the world. All too often, people expect and hope to find the perfect workplace, and it doesn't exist. Thankfully, God does not require perfection in us to accomplish his purpose in the world. As a matter of fact, he's very good at overcoming the world. Expect trouble. Be ready for it. And respond to it like a child of God. Which leads us to our next point. Focus on your current job rather than longing for your next job. Focus on your current job rather than longing for your next job. There's a passage of scripture, Matthew 6, 33 through 34. Matthew 6, 33 gets talked about all the time. "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and its righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." Everybody, if you've been in church for a little bit of your life, you've heard that verse. We rarely get to verse 34. Do not worry about tomorrow, because today has enough trouble of its own. In our workplaces, sometimes we spend way too much time thinking about tomorrow, thinking about what we wish was true, and we lose our focus on what's going on now. Have you ever been around a person at work? You know the person. The one who talks about how much more they're getting paid at the office down the road, about how much better the folks get treated in the shop down the street, about how much better the jobs are across the water, about how much more you can get paid if you work a state over. about how much better your friend's boss treats him, about how much better your cousin has it because he left this job where you are now and he went to another job and his life has just turned all peaches and cream. You ever wanted to look at somebody who's talking like that and say, you know what, if it's so great over there, why don't you leave? If it's so great everywhere else, why are you still here? Friends, the job you have now is where God is. Now, that doesn't mean you don't think about your future. That doesn't mean you don't dream. That doesn't mean you don't make a plan for where you want to be 5 years down the road. That's not it at all. That's not what Jesus is saying. He's saying, don't be so in the future that you can't be in the moment. You can do both of those things. So what that means is that tomorrow when you go to work, whatever your work looks like, whether you're paid for it or whether you're changing diapers at home or whatever else it may be, whatever your work looks like, I want all of us to follow this counsel from John Ortberg. When you go to work tomorrow, do your job as Jesus would do your job. If you dislike your job or hate your job, do your job as Jesus would do your job. That's actually the quickest way either into a new job or into joy in your current job. Did you hear that? Do your job as Jesus would do your job. That's the quickest way into a new job or into joy in your current job. If you work hard and you're known as a hard worker, guess what? One day you're going to get a better job. The best way to get where you want to be is to do your job as Jesus would do your job. The job you go to tomorrow, Jesus is there. It's holy work. It's significant work. It matters. Do your job as Jesus would do your job. The next two pieces of counsel kind of go together. Two sides of the same coin. The first part of it is be coachable. The next part of it is be a good coach. Be coachable. Be a good coach. Be coachable. What does that mean? How many of you are better at what you do during the day today than you were 3 months ago? You don't have to raise your hand. Hopefully you are. But how many of you are better today at your job than you were 3 months ago? Students, whatever math class you're in, I hope you're better at math than you were 3 months ago because you've learned something. That's the idea, right? We've learned something. We've done some homework, right? Good. If we are still doing our job the same way as we did 5 years ago, shame on us. Because friends, what we are supposed to do is we are supposed to grow, learn new skills, get better at what we do because we are working at our job with all our heart, not for ourselves. We're working for God. So we should be constantly learning and growing. You know one of the best ways to learn and grow? To listen to people. Because your bosses and your coworkers and your mentors, these folks know things that you do not know, and they can tell you and give you feedback that will help you grow. Sometimes that feedback is unpleasant. Maybe it's in a formal review setting. Or maybe it's just from a person who doesn't have too many relational skills and their feedback to you is gruff. That doesn't mean they're wrong. One of the best things we can do to make our jobs better is to put down our defensiveness and say, God, this critique that I've received, it doesn't seem fair to me. What do I need to learn from this? You may need to learn that person's just very unpleasant and doesn't know how to handle feedback. Or you may learn that that person's unpleasant, but what they said was true. My first job, I was 13, 14 years old. I worked for a lawyer, and I lived about 10 minutes from my house, did odd jobs for him, did all sorts of things. Some things I knew how to do, some things I didn't know how to do. Even the things I knew how to do, he showed me how he wanted me to do them. He was a very eclectic kind of a guy, very specific about how he wanted tasks handled. There was one particular day that There was a whole bunch of old furniture that if I saw it today, I probably would ship straight to the dumpster, okay? But a whole bunch of old furniture and picture frames. And he said, you know what? I want to remake those and repaint those and restain those. I need you to sand those. Great, I can do that. He said, no, here's how I want you to do it. I want you to use the power sander, then I want you to use the finishing power sander, and then I want you to use the coarse sandpaper by hand, and then I want you to use the fine sandpaper by hand. Anybody have any idea right off how long that's going to take? Okay, that's going to take me about all day and then some. I'm 14. I don't have a whole lot of patience. So I get over there with that furniture. I take the power sander, which was a lot of fun, by the way, and I ripped into the wood and everything, got it going good, and then I did use the finishing sander a little bit. Then I, you know, grabbed the coarse sandpaper and, you know, maybe hit one corner on each thing. I'm like, you know what? This stuff is pretty smooth. I'm done. I went, got him. He came back and looked at it. And he was kind of a crusty guy. He felt like two pieces and kind of looked at me and stomped away and said, you better finish. I don't pay for half-tail work. That's not exactly what he said. I kind of, you know. Said, okay. So I went back. For the rest of the day, I sanded every piece of that furniture. By about 6 o'clock that afternoon, I had the fine sandpaper. And I finished it, and I went back and got him. He came back around, looked at it, and said, felt every piece, held him up a little bit, looked at him, very particular. He said, that's good. He said, now, don't ever confuse good enough ever with your best ever. Now, go mow the lawn. Don't ever confuse good enough ever with your best ever. You know what? This guy was not warm and fuzzy. This guy is not someone that you'd feel comfortable around necessarily, but I've never forgotten that. Be coachable. Learn something from somebody. And don't continue to be the same worker that you were 1 month ago, 3 months ago, or a year ago. Learn, grow, listen, and be a good coach. Be coachable, be a good coach. If you supervise people, if you lead people, you are responsible for them. Not just responsible for them in the way that they do their work or the effort that they bring to the table. You are responsible for praying over them as a believer. You don't have to pray out. They don't have to know you pray for them. I understand workplace stuff and all that kind of thing. You're responsible for praying for them. You're responsible for listening to them. You're responsible for speaking and coaching to them in a way that is respectful and kind. You are responsible for telling them things, even if it's painful, that if they don't fix, that will hurt them in their jobs down the road. As a follower of Jesus, you are responsible for helping the people that are in your charge grow into becoming the best employees they can be. But Randy, I don't supervise anyone. You're still responsible for building into people. If you're a student, you're responsible for building into the people in your classroom. You're responsible for building into the people on your team. You're responsible for helping the student who's struggling with those math problems that you understand how to do. You're responsible for helping and encouraging them. You may be the worker who sees an injustice happening to another worker, and you step in between the boss and that worker and say, stop. Understand, friends, doing the work that Jesus calls you to do may one day mean that you have to do something that costs you your job to stand up for a person that Jesus loves. You are called to be coachable and to be a coach that encourages and brings light into your workplace, because God is there and He has put you there to be light in that space. Our final thought for this morning, and this is going to sound a little strange, so I'm going to have to frame it for you. But write this down. Your work is God's will. Your work is God's will. I have a metaphor I want to expound upon with you all for just a few minutes. It comes from Isaiah 64, verse 8, where the writer says, "Yet, O Lord, you are our Father. We are the clay. You are the potter. We are all the work of your hand." Perhaps you've been to Williamsburg and you've bought pottery. Maybe you've been somewhere and seen a potter actually place a big lump of clay on the wheel and seen the potter wheel begin to spin, and that potter put their hands on the clay in just the right way to form a pot that was unlike any other pot, or to form a plate, or to form a mug, or something else, a vase. Maybe you've seen that happen. The image here, the metaphor here, is God taking each of us. Our lives are a lump of clay, and He takes each one of us and He places us on a wheel and begins to shape us. Shape us into what? To shape us into mature followers of Jesus. Ones who embody the fruit of the Spirit. Patience, gentleness, kindness, self-control, love, hope, mercy, and peace. All of the characteristics of what it means to be a servant of Jesus. God, over the course of our lifetimes, has us shaping us, making us, forming us into who He has called us to be. Now, let me tell you, where does God form us? Friends, God uses our whole lives to form us, but let me give you a little hint. Where do you spend most of your time besides sleeping? At work. If you work the 9-to-5, you spend 40 hours a week at work. Most people don't work the 9-to-5. Even when they go home, folks are working. Teachers are grading tests. Stay-at-home moms, gracious. The only time they're not working is when they're sleeping. They're probably even working then somehow. When we work, friends, at our work, that is where God is shaping us. Your work is God's wheel. Your work is where He has placed you, not simply to do God's work, but to be formed into a disciple of Jesus. You are placed in the work environment, and God says, "Now that you're there, I'm going to start molding and shaping." So if God wants you to learn how to pray, and you want to learn how to pray and grow with God, you need to learn how to pray at work. Because that is where God has placed you. If you are if God is trying to grow kindness in you, you practice kindness at work. That doesn't mean you don't practice kindness at home. That's another forming place. But your work is God's wheel because you spend so much time there. God does not wait to form you into His disciple for when you get into this room. God is forming you into His disciple all week long. Your work time, having to deal with that difficult customer, that difficult client, or that difficult coworker, or that difficult boss, that is spiritual transformation time. Where God has you on the wheel and is shaping you into His devoted, fully mature follower. Your work is God's wheel. You're not there by accident. There are two important lessons to remember just as we close with that. First of all, your workday is filled with teachable moments. Don't miss them. All through your day, the Spirit is speaking because He's right with you. Don't miss the lessons. Don't miss the moments. Be ready each morning for how God is going to speak and shape you that day, because it's happening. The second thing, how many of you have had something hard happen at work in the last month? Anybody, you can raise your hands on that one. Anybody have something hard happen at work in the last month? Man, I need to work where y'all work. Yeah. Let's just imagine that you had a hard conversation. Let's just imagine there was a day where things didn't go well. Let's just imagine where you had to make a difficult choice. The truth of the matter, friends, is we're never alone at our work. Because God is where we work, God is always with us. So when we have to process a hard conversation, we don't process it alone. When we feel neglected by our boss or by our colleagues, we don't have to talk about it alone. When we feel like things are not working and our work is simply becoming toil and drudgery and we want to cry out to the ceiling, we don't cry out to the ceiling alone because God is with us. Whatever situation you face in your workplace, you're never alone. It's never you against the world. Now, it may be you and God against the world, but take heart, friends. Jesus has a really good record against the world. In this world, you may have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. You know, we come to this table, and I think about Jesus.